Today we'll be talking about the idea of centrism. If left versus right is bad, why not shoot for something down the middle? Maybe if we compromise and use rationalism, we can solve our conundrums by mixing and matching different ideas from both sides. We'll look at the facts, we'll listen to some different arguments, and we'll see what happens. My name is Taylor, and this is episode 8 of Escaping Left, Right, and Center. Okay, welcome back, everyone. Let's get into it. The past few episodes, we've spent most of our time looking at the concept of left and right, where it came from, some of the origin of the different terminology we're all familiar with. We've looked at how electoral systems like first past the post aggravate the problems. We've looked at some alternatives. But one thing we have not yet touched upon is the idea of centrism, which I think we frequently hear terms like center-left, center-right, centrist think tank, you know, something like that. So I thought it would be worth taking the time to dive in and do some investigation into A, what is centrism, and B, if the purpose of this podcast is to eliminate the left-right distinction, why not commit to a centrist labeling? And we'll get into that. I'm going to spoil it right away. I don't think centrism is a inherently valid framing for certain ideas. We'll get into why that is, but I think it would be irresponsible of us to not take the time to at least work through it. Having said that, my plan is to quickly touch upon a handful of well-known centrist alternatives to the well-known left-right dichotomy. Take a look at some of their ideas very briefly. I think it's important to begin with the idea that, at least speaking for myself, I have a lot of respect for people who decide that they're not just going to automatically accept one way or the other. They're not going to adhere automatically to a narrative of either side, and they're willing at least to put in some effort into differentiating themselves from the two mega blocks on either side. So I will most likely come across rather critically in this episode, but I wanted to at least begin by not completely raiding on people's parade. So I give people props. I think it's important to try and think for yourself. I just, for me personally, I don't know that I think that this is the best way of doing it. Let's hit on a couple big centrist groups that I think many of us have either heard of or have bumped into. This is not going to be an in-depth look at each of these, but I think we see enough of these around and we kind of encounter them on a regular enough basis that we'll be able to contextually absorb some of their thoughts. So when we look at the dictionary definition of centrism, this comes from the Cambridge Dictionary. It says, centrism, political beliefs or policies that are at the center of the range of political opinions. Which I think is fine. That's, you know, the freeze-dried version. But what does that look like in 2023 in the United States, right? The first group we're going to talk about would probably be, I'm not sure how they'd feel about being called centrists, but I'm going to put them in this bucket, and I'll tell you why. So the first group we're going to talk about is the Libertarian Party. Traditionally, definitely more associated with the quote-unquote right. They're more conservative in a lot of their sort of fundamental leanings. But with the Libertarians, I read a funny joke one time. It said the Libertarians would be a lot more successful if they didn't sit around arguing about what is and isn't libertarianism. And what are the Libertarians, right? They're sort of your typical free market, laissez-faire capitalists, but are in favor of a more relaxed social environment. The idea of, like, as long as I'm sitting on my couch not hurting anyone, and you're sitting on your couch not hurting anyone, it doesn't really matter what the two of us are doing. If that's an unfair summation, you can let me know. But I think at a high level, that's how most people think of the Libertarians. So in that group, we begin to see this first, uh, the f- first emergence of this sort of pick and choose ideology where there are bits of this over here that we don't mind and we'll either tacitly approve of or go along with certain ideas from the other side. Another big group, which I haven't heard as much of recently, but this was probably more prevalent back in the 90s, is the Third Way. The Third Way, which was a group which sort of reached its zenith in the Clinton administration. And this was a group who attempted to reconcile different right and left policies by trying to synthesize this sort of economic Frankenstein with some traditionally more left-leaning social policies. So again, very similar to the libertarians, except that libertarians are traditionally fairly far to the conservative side of the spectrum, whereas the Third Way was playing it a little more down the middle economically. And as I mentioned, this sort of reached its peak in the Bill Clinton, Tony Blair era. The next group I wanted to talk about is called No Labels. These guys have been in the news recently. And they are it's technically a nonprofit organization that has been working to facilitate bipartisan action in government. And I'll give them credit. They've actually succeeded to some degree. They were the driving force behind the Problem Solvers Caucus in the House of Representatives, which is a group of about 60 members of the House, split evenly down the middle between Democrats and Republicans. They were responsible for that big, huge infrastructure bill that got pushed through not too long ago. So as far as outcome is concerned, they've been fairly productive. They're currently trying to get on the ballot for the 2024 elections to put forward a presidential and vice presidential candidate. There's been all sorts of roadblocks that they've been attempting to overcome. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. But again, like the other ones we've mentioned, this is sort of the peanut butter and jelly sandwich method, where you take a bit of one side and a bit of the other and you smash them together and try and get them to work together. The policies that they have succeeded in moving forward have been very much in the common interest, which again, it seems like that would be a straightforward way to compromise, but people are difficult. So things like appropriations bills, infrastructure, social security, things like that. And then one last group we'll talk about is called the Forward Party. They're a conglomeration of several previous minor parties that have all sort of melded into one. It was founded by Andrew Yang, who many of you may have heard of. And their goals have been to try and reduce polarization, trying to push some electoral reforms forward, which, philosophically, not opposed to. Depends what the reforms are. I think they're currently a PAC, but they're trying to become an official party and get some ballot access somewhere. Oh, here it is. They had merged with the Save America movement and the Renew American movement, and are striving to make a new third party. When these guys started out, they were very much left-leaning. Andrew Yang is famous for his universal basic income ideas.
It's free real estate.
As well as universal health care and some funky public finance stuff.
Democracy dollars.
You can look it up. And then after they merged with these two smaller groups, they've leveled out considerably. They no longer take hard and fast stances on some of the big tentpole issues like gun rights and abortion, things like that. They kind of stick to wonkish policy stuff and election reform and open primaries, that kind of thing. In contrast to the other ones, they've sort of backed off the ideological elements, and instead of picking and choosing, they're focused more on mechanical adjustments to the current system. So now let's think about it. What do all these different groups have in common? We've touched on it a little bit, and the hallmark of a centrist group is this sort of pick and choose mentality. where, you know, we talk about the means to an end. We can agree that, you know, X is a good goal to strive for, but then what are the means to achieve that result? And I think that many centrists like to pragmatically analyze the different ends, the different goals, and conclude like, yes, that's a noble goal, yes, that's a noble goal, but they spend less time considering the means in which you achieve said goal. The reason I say that is because each of the two major blocks have within their thought processes these baked in presuppositions. And by that I mean a set of assumptions that they all within their group hold to be true as they progress towards their goals. And so while you can be pragmatic about, yes, I think the government should intervene in this type of situation to strive for this type of goal, if you're not fully understanding the assumptions behind one group's means versus the other group, I think that's where it gets slippery and you lose some of the compelling elements of your argument, because pragmatism will only get you so far. The average person thinks emotionally first and then rationalizes backwards in time. So you can't always just appeal to someone's rational thought process. For instance, if you think about the type of person who is traditionally in favor of a tightly managed, balanced budget and a reduced welfare state, that type of person will most likely not be in favor of universal basic income and heavy-handed economic interventionism, right? So it's not just that some ideas are good and some are bad, it's that there are sets of ideas which determine the manner in which people think about problems. There was one author who put forward this idea about two visions of human nature when it came to politics. There was the constrained vision and the unconstrained vision. And it was pretty insightful, I thought, where in the unconstrained vision, the view is that people are malleable and perfectible, and that as long as money is being spent in the right place, in the right way, by the right people, with the government working in its most efficient way, then progress is achievable and this utopian goal can be progressed towards. Whereas the constrained vision laid out how there is inherent flaw in every person and how there are trade-offs to every solution and that individual action functions better than government action. It's a fascinating read. The book is called A Conflict of Visions by Thomas Sowell. And so it obviously is a very high-level thought experiment. But if you think about trying to pick and choose different things from within the umbrella of these two visions, they are ultimately incompatible with each other as far as convincing large amounts of people to subscribe to a quote-unquote centrist vision. That's why I think many of these groups remain very small, because they lack fundamental appeal at this presuppositional level, because they're not subscribing to this base foundational belief system. Some of them, like the Forward Party, have just decided to not address these big hot-button issues, but then what's the incentive for voters to leave their current base if these issues that always rank in the top five most important are not being addressed by the smaller parties, right? Like, why am I going to vote for this small party when they're not saying anything about this thing that's very important to me? So I think that's another reason that they struggle to gain legitimacy and polling numbers. And then, as we've been looking at, in a first-past-the-post system, a smaller third party can only be the spoiler. That's really the end of the road for a small third party. Since we're now in this end-stage Duverger's Law crucible, even someone like Ross Perot and other third-party candidates, they'll only ever hurt the party closest to their platform. So in addition to wishy-washy pick-and-choosiness in the current mechanical system, it's just a big waste of time. To that end, I'll give Mr. Yang and the Forward Party a bit of credit. I don't necessarily think that the electoral strategies they're advocating for are the best, but at least the idea of the one we've got now doesn't seem to be working, and we should be open to changing it. I think that's at least at its highest level an admirable pursuit. So to summarize, I think that centrism, while idealistic, is not realistic. Picking and choosing different elements of the existing platforms creates a combination that only appeals to a very select group, right? You're going to need to find people who have the same idiosyncratic pragmatism as you, because as your little third-party group picks and chooses the stuff that it likes, it's only going to appeal to other folks who have that same filter that you do. The end result is a bunch of these little political cliques, which there are a million of them. There aren't many that have made it to the national level. It is fun to go and look at during election time all the different parties that exist in one state. I think in Massachusetts there's something like 17 political affiliations. Some of them are fairly amusing. But that's basically what you get, a handful of hodgepodge little cliques who, at the end of the day, will be nothing other than spoilers, if anything. Which is why I don't advocate for the label of centrism. I don't personally advocate for any of the centrist groups. I don't think it's ultimately helpful. I think people saying center-left, center-right are just trying to soften the perception of their own convictions. Like, I understand what they're getting at, but at the same time, it seems like an avoidance tactic to not have to put a stake in the ground on some things, but that's just me. So at the end of the day, centrism, bad, hard to say, case by case. Helpful, I think. No, maybe that's harsh. Maybe it's not. It's just where I sit currently. So that's all for today. Ross Perot is a fascinating guy. It's always fun to read about his exploits, but more about him another time. Before we go, I have a special announcement. Not that special, but somewhat special. I sometimes say that if I've got something wrong, or if you'd like to set me straight, you should let me know. And now there's a way to do that. There is an email address. There is not yet a website. We're still working on that. But now there's a way that you can get in touch with me. So if you'd like to send me an email, tell me that I'm very right or very wrong or whatever else you'd like to send, you can send an email to contact@elrcpodcast.com. So that's contact@elrcpodcast.com. Escaping Left, Right, and Center podcast.com. Website hopefully will be forthcoming. Time is fleeting and difficult to set aside, but we'll get there. Quick thank you to this week's sponsor. Once again, the fine folks over at Five Stones Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Reach out to them at fivestonesbjj.com. Tell them Taylor sent you. And that'll do it. Please don't forget to leave a rating. Don't forget to follow, share with your friends. Much appreciated. We're sneaking up on 500 downloads in total, which I know is a small number for many podcasts, but it's a big number for me. So I appreciate each and every one of you who listen. Next week is episode 9, hard to believe. And we're going to start thinking ahead outside of some of this mechanical stuff that we've been thinking about. So when we're done beating all these wonkish ideas back and forth about how to fix things, we're going to launch into season 2, where I hope to get into a bit more philosophy, political science, that kind of thing. Super exciting. So we'll touch on that and some other things. Until then, thank you again for listening. Much appreciated. And we'll see you next time.